The second meeting of the Education Policy Reform Committee will come to order. The clerk will note the roll. Our first bill up today is Senate File 1213, and I will move Representative Kelly, Senate File 213, to be before the committee, and then I will move the A1 amendment so that you have your bill in working order. So, members, again, I repeat, I move the A1 amendment to Senate File 1213. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Kelly, go ahead and explain your bill now as it's been amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. This is a bill that was actually passed through committee last year, was included in the omnibus bill, and ran into some issues there, of course, so we're going to run this on its own. Really, this is a bill all about accountability in our adult basic ed programs so that we can chart and know what the effectiveness of what we're doing. It goes along with everything else. We are trying to do this session with accountability and reform and making sure that we're doing the right thing. I have Mr. Tom Citron-Heisen here from St. Paul's Adult Basic Ed Programs if we have any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions from members? Well, Mr. Heisen, as long as you've come, I think that I want to welcome you and certainly let you say a few words if you would like. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Tom Citron-Heisen, and I'm the Legislative Chair for Literacy Action Network, which is a statewide professional issues group representing ABE's professionals around the state. We have about 400 members. And we'd just like to thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for considering this bill. It's basically a technical change, but one which will really help us with accountability, doing longer-term follow-up to assess the effectiveness of our services in serving people who are on MFEP, as well as a wide variety of adult learners. So we think it'll really help us prove out the effectiveness of the work that we do.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the work that ABE does. We look forward to some reform in that area, too, in the future, but that will be discussion for another day. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, I will renew my motion that Senate File 1213, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the general register. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members?
Members, our next bill is House File 1870, Representative Peterson's bill. So, Representative Peterson, please take your place. Members, we know this is rather controversial, and we want to be as respectful as we can of the differences in our opinions and call attention to my behavior, too, if it needs. I respect that and hope that we can have just a really good discussion. Representative Peterson, please move your bill.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1870 for passage and referral to the Committee on Education Finance.
And then would you also move your delete everything amendment, the DE4 amendment, members?
I'd like to move the DE4 amendment.
Members, the DE4 amendment has been moved. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. And now 1870 is in the shape in which Representative Peterson would like to present it. Please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I'd like to take slight issue with your assertion that this bill is controversial. I think you'll hear testimony later on in the committee about just how popular this bill is, and I won't preempt that. House File 1870 does three major things. It eliminates the seniority mandate at the state level in instances of unrequested leave. It amends the right of recall statute only for ineffective teachers. And it also has some language in there about realignment of staff or forced realignment of staff to accommodate seniority claims of teachers. I'll do a quick overview of the bill. We have a lot of testifiers, so I'd like to allow them to get in here. A couple of other items that the bill does, it changes the definition of provisional license for alternatively prepared teachers or alternatively certified teachers. The bill really, aside from the assertion that this bill is basing these decisions entirely on the evaluations, it's actually a weighted decision, and there's three components to that decision. The first is subject matter licensure area. The second is teacher evaluations, and the third is seniority. And as I stated, the right of recall instance only applies to, or the reduction to 1 year only applies for teachers that are indeed ineffective. And I think I'll leave it at that, Madam Chair, and allow our testifiers. We have some that need to get on the road, and I'll take questions after that.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. I believe the first is Sarah Schultes, a teacher. Please come forward. Welcome, Ms. Schultes, to our committee, and please say your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sarah Schultes. Good morning. I teach 8th grade science at a Minneapolis public school, and I'm here today to encourage you to support House File 1870. I love my job as a teacher. I have had students that other teachers have given up on come into my classroom and thrive as they discover that their curiosity and energy can be well used in a science classroom. One of these students I'm going to call Micah. My student, Micah, came into my room with a bad reputation this year. He had never experienced success in school. Micah's very intelligent, but has not always been able to focus his intelligence in productive ways. Through encouragement and structure, I have helped Micah focus his energy in my classroom, and he's earned an A in my class. At the pizza party I held for my A science students, I heard other students say to him, "Micah, you're in here? I didn't know you were good at school." And I heard Micah proudly tell them that he is good at science. I share this with you today because I'm very proud of the work that I do, and I'm proud of the work that my colleagues do. As a young woman with many career options, I want to be part of a respected and distinguished profession. I believe that teaching is one of the most important professions in the world, and I want to make sure that we have the best teachers in our neediest classrooms. In order to attract the best candidates to the teaching profession, and in order to gain respect in the public eye, we have to hold ourselves to a high standard. And right now, I don't think we're doing that. By ignoring teacher effectiveness and decisions about hiring and firing, the work that we do feels deemed irrelevant. To ignore the quality of work that my colleagues and I do and simply reduce us to a number of years in the classroom is hugely insulting to me. Furthermore, I ask you to end seniority-based layoffs because it is the just thing to do. I work in a school where 98% of my students are eligible for free and reduced lunch. They are years behind grade level on reading and math. They are brilliant individuals, but they need the best teachers possible in order to reach their full potential. They need a teacher who's going to make a difference, whether that teacher's been in the district for 1 year, 10 years, or 30 years. My students are the reason I am here today to ask you to support House File 1870 and end seniority-based layoffs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schultes. Next, we have Jerry Powell. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Powell. Please say your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Powell, and I am a state director with Students First. We are a national, bipartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to transforming public education in America. We are a membership-based organization with more than 1 million members joining since our founding in December of last year. I am proud to be here on behalf of over 16,000 Students First Minnesota members and I'm here to voice students for strong support for House File 1870, a bill which will put an end to the practice of seniority-based layoffs in Minnesota. Research confirms that teachers are the most important in-school factor affecting student learning. Yet in Minnesota currently, teacher quality is ignored when districts are forced to make the unfortunate decision to lay off teachers in tough economic times. Minnesota is one of only 11 states left in the country that requires teacher layoffs be based on length of service, not the quality of a teacher's work with students. Ending quality-blind, seniority-based layoffs is critical to ensuring the state's best teachers are kept in the classroom. I want to highlight two critical points backed by research. Point number one, seniority-based layoffs disproportionately disadvantages schools in high-need areas. Studies have shown that seniority-based layoffs negatively impact highest-need schools the most. These schools have the largest numbers of new teachers who are the first to lose their jobs when layoffs occur. One study revealed that quality-blind, seniority-based layoffs result in 25% more layoffs in the poorest schools than the wealthiest schools. This means that for every 100 positions eliminated in a wealthy suburban district, 125 teachers would be let go in a poor urban district, disrupting the classrooms of an additional 615 students. Second point I want to make, seniority-based layoffs causes more teachers, not fewer teachers, to lose their jobs. Seniority-based layoffs result in more teachers losing their jobs because junior teachers earn less money. As a result, districts in Minnesota are forced to lay off 34.9% more teachers when trying to fill budget gaps under a seniority-based layoff program. For example, if $500 million in budget cuts affecting teachers were introduced in Minnesota, an additional 3,318 teachers would unnecessarily be laid off, and an additional 81,631 students would have their classrooms disrupted under the existing seniority-based system. This means that more classrooms and more students are impacted by seniority-based layoffs. Ending seniority-based layoffs is good sense. It is the right thing to do. It is what your constituents want. Over 400 Students First Minnesota members have signed a petition to urge Minnesota lawmakers to end the practice. It is not a Republican or a DFL issue. It is simply a matter of putting teacher effectiveness ahead of other considerations in the unfortunate event that layoffs are necessary due to budget constraints. And it is a matter of putting students first. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Powell. Bill English. And after Bill will be Jennifer Flood. Welcome to the committee, Mr. English. Please say your name for the record and proceed.
My name is William English, Madam Chair. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. Unfortunately, I got up this morning after writing my notes last night and jumped in the car and headed to St. Paul without my notes. So I guess I will have to speak from my heart.
We will like that.
For more than 10 years, I have been a so-called activist in Minneapolis Public Schools. I have worked as a partner with the Minneapolis School Board and the Minneapolis School Administration on issues affecting the disparity that exists between the achievement of students of color in general, African-American students in particular, and all students. Over the time, I've come to learn that the current practice of a rigid seniority-based layoff and placement system has had a huge impact on the achievement of our children. My background and experience as a vice president of human resources for a company once named called Control Data, I've had the opportunity to be involved in union negotiations. During that time, I had the opportunity to negotiate agreements with bargaining units that the Control Data acquired through companies it bought. In order to satisfy federal requirements for a diverse workforce, we had to negotiate some changes and modifications in the seniority system. I was able to get many unions, including IEU, to modify their seniority system so that when layoffs occurred, They would, for example, trade two union jobs for one that was non-union. I mean, two seniority placements against one that was not high on the seniority list. We were able to maintain a diverse workforce, and the unions had some protection for union members. This is a modest change. Yet, I have been unable to convince the MFT in Minneapolis to even consider such a modification. At a time when unions and districts were not recruiting teachers of color, which is also impacted by a rigid seniority system. Over the last 8 years, Minneapolis has lost more than two-thirds of its teachers of color. Mm-hmm. At a time when our children are failing, the need to see role models in the classroom and to inspire other students of color to aspire to become teachers, it is clear to me that some changes are necessary. So I'm here today to urge you to consider this reasonable and modest proposal to end this practice of last in and first out. Give our teachers of color an opportunity to be in the classroom to inspire and motivate our children. Do not take my remarks to presume that you have to be a teacher of color to motivate and inspire children of color. That is not the case. I have seen culturally competent white teachers and incompetent culturally competent teachers of color. So it's not about race, but it's an opportunity to have a diverse workforce and to bring a system that has no place in a modern school system. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. English. Jennifer Flood. Following Jennifer will be Nicholas Vanovitz from MNCAN. Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and representatives, my name is Jennifer Flood. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of House File 1870 and the importance of keeping the best teachers in the classroom. I'm a parent of three children, ages 3, 5, and 7, and the eldest is a second grader in St. Paul Public School District. When my husband and I moved to the Twin Cities 3 years ago, we deliberately chose to buy a home in St. Paul because we wanted our children to attend a public school that would provide a microcosm of the diversity that they will ultimately find when they go out in the world. I grew up in Silicon Valley in California among a very diverse group of friends, and this profoundly impacted my worldview, and I've always wanted a similar experience for my kids. And like many parents, my husband and I want the best education possible for our children as well. And we're grateful that our daughter has had three excellent teachers since she started at our neighborhood school in kindergarten. And we've been looking forward to our son starting kindergarten there next year and possibly having those same excellent teachers. However, last spring, we discovered that our daughter's teacher would lose her position for the following year. The budget was shrinking, and as the newest teacher on staff, under the current seniority-based policy, she would have to go. It didn't matter that she was recognized by her colleagues and by parents as one of the best teachers at the school. And it didn't matter that she had done an extraordinary job teaching an extremely diverse group of kids. I'm a parent who regularly volunteers, and I had seen how at the beginning of the year, there were many students who entered the classroom not speaking English at all and not having the opportunity to hear it at home, didn't know the alphabet. And there were other students who came in reading at a third grade level. And I saw how over the course of the year, she consistently ensured that there were possibilities for the higher achieving students to push themselves and reach their full potential. And the same thing for the lower achieving students, who at the same time when they came in, she worked diligently to make sure that every single day they were in small reading groups, and by the end of the year, every single one of those students was reading on grade level. She also put incredible energy into establishing great relationships with parents and created systems to help us support our children's learning at home. And she made learning so much fun for kids that they look forward to coming to school every single day. When the other parents and I learned that this school would lose this teacher, we went to the principal to find out what she could do. It turned out it was nothing. As the principal, the person who was charged with leading the school, she didn't actually have control over who could stay on staff. We then explored how we could change this policy at the district level, and we heard, well, it's complicated. It'll take time. It might change, but not this year, and not next. Maybe by the time your kids graduate from junior high or high school. This experience caused me to seriously doubt whether our schools are actually focused on serving the best interests of kids. It made me question whether I had made the right choice in sending our children to our local neighborhood school.
knowing that we could continue to lose more great teachers as budgets continue to contract. And it certainly caused other parents the same doubt, and sure enough, some chose to send their children to other schools this year. And so we see the damage that this outdated policy of seniority-based layoffs does, not just to our children, but also how it erodes the confidence that parents and entire neighborhoods have in our local community school, and ultimately in our system of public education. And so I say to all of you, we need to value performance and end seniority-based layoffs now. We need to save great teachers like this one and implement a system of teacher evaluation that is fair, and then use it when we have to make hard decisions due to tight budgets. And we need to do it this year. The stakes are too high for our kids, our schools, and our communities to wait. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being such a great parent. Nicholas Benevitz. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and proceed.
Nicholas Banovitz. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for hearing my testimony to support a bill that positions our state to reward and retain its greatest teachers. My name is Nicholas Banovitz, and I'm the Public Affairs Manager for MNCAN, the Minnesota Campaign for Achievement Now. In 2011, thanks to your leadership and the governor's commitment to education, Minnesota passed its first statewide teacher evaluation framework. It will provide us with a trusted system to make personnel decisions based on teacher performance. This, however, is not enough. Our evaluation system will only drive gains in student achievement if we connect it to common sense reforms. To make Minnesota's teacher evaluation system even more valuable, we believe we must adopt a layoff model that accounts for performance. House File 1870 does this. In the coming days, MNCAN will release the findings of a just-completed comprehensive statewide poll on various education topics, particularly how Minnesotans define a great teacher and how they value that educator. We successfully engaged 1,000 Minnesotans in the poll. The results are not only compelling, the voices of Minnesotans are unified. Here's what we found. Minnesotans overall report that student learning progress is significantly more important than years of teaching experience, standardized test scores, or a principal's evaluation in determining how well a teacher performs in the classroom, teacher salaries, and which teachers are laid off first. For the purposes of the poll, researchers define student learning progress to the respondents as, quote unquote, improvement in academic knowledge, study skills, test scores, grades, and other success factors made by particular teachers, students over time. Among five factors to consider in teacher layoff decisions, Minnesotans overall put student learning progress in first place and years of experience in fourth place. If teacher layoffs are required, most respondents, 91%, believe seniority should be considered. But the primary factor should be teacher performance. We couldn't agree more. Many experienced teachers are highly effective, but the number of years a teacher spends in the classroom provides little indication of the quality of their teaching. A clear majority of respondents, 79%, believe laying off teachers based primarily on seniority is hurting the quality of our education for our students. While MNCAN will distribute a more comprehensive release of a statewide poll in the coming days, we felt it important to bring to your attention the data relevant to House File 1870. Minnesotans are clearly voicing their appreciation of and value for great teachers. Intuition and research tell us that teachers are the most important in-school factor for students' success. Highly effective teachers positively impact the course of a child's academic and professional life. In fact, students taught by a very effective teacher for a single school year may gain up to a full year's worth of additional academic growth compared to a student assigned to a less effective teacher. Our achievement gaps and educational disparities among Minnesota students are, in many instances, widening. They are immoral and a grave disservice to our collective future. House File 1870 is our opportunity to retain our greatest teachers, who are among the most capable to reduce our achievement gaps. Please support this step to help ensure every Minnesota child has access to a great public education. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Linnell Mickelson. And Mitra Nelson, you are on deck. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Linnell Mickelson. I am here as the co-founder of a group called Put Kids First. We're an all-volunteer grassroots group of parents, citizens, who are pushing for contract reform and changes in Minneapolis. We're also organizers of the Contract for Student Achievement, which is a community-wide, citywide coalition pushing for many of these changes, including the end, the last in, first out. You know, I come to this as someone who has spent 17 consecutive years as a Minneapolis public school parent. All three of my sons went to Minneapolis public schools from kindergarten through high school. Is this me?
Perhaps has a cell phone on. Would you check your cell phones and make sure they're off?
Sorry, might have been me. I guess I have to say, as someone from Minneapolis, I speak to this as a Minneapolis parent. Maybe something, nothing at all, just keep going. I speak as a Minneapolis parent, and starting in 2001, we lost 28% of our student enrollment, and that led to loss of over 1,000 teaching positions. So in Minneapolis, as a parent, I can say I was there the whole time. We watched up close and personal what happens when you have seniority layoffs. And year after year after year, we watched excellent, dynamic teachers being laid off and unfortunately almost invariably replaced by teachers who were either less talented who went all the way down to dismal. It was like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre arrived in our school every single spring. And it really changed my opinion of last in, first out. It was the most jaw-dropping waste of human talent and potential I've witnessed. And I was quiet about it for about 8 years because I'm a lifelong progressive DFLer, as are almost all the people in my coalition. In Minneapolis, this is not a right versus left issue. It's a DFL versus DFL issue. And I kept silent because as someone who got my first union card at 17, as someone who was an organizer for the Newspaper Guild, I just didn't want to say anything because I was told that last in, first out was the foundation of a union system and it would fall apart if we got rid of it. And I guess I have to say I came to the conclusion of that if that's the case, we need a better foundation. And also I had to ask myself how many of my core DFL values I was willing to compromise. Great education for kids, racial equity, social justice, good governance, right use of the taxpayer dollars that are precious. We want them to go to our most effective teachers. And I had to ask myself how many of these core DFL principles I was willing to compromise in order to defend a system that is really unjust and immoral. We watched it. The fact that we're saying this, we're protesting against this, isn't because we don't get it. It's because we do get it, because we lived it. You know, during the time that we were watching these huge mass layoffs, we did lose, in terms of raw numbers, I think it depends how you look at it, but in terms of raw numbers, we lost half our teachers of color. And this is in a district where 70% of our kids are teachers of color and 85% of our school teachers are white. And the whole thing is just a mess. It's a car crash. If you've watched it, you don't want to see it happen again. In the last 2 years, enrollment in Minneapolis has stabilized, and so we kind of hope that the worst of the layoffs are over. But with 70% of our students, kids of color, and the biggest achievement gap in the state, one of the second biggest in the nation, unless we can narrow this achievement gap, these families are not going to stay, and we're going to watch the whole thing happen all over again. So I have to say, as a progressive, as someone who values unions, who wants to see them sustainable and head into the future, this is not good for kids, it is not good for the teaching profession, and it is not good for the labor movement. So I urge you to pass Brandon Peterson's bill, which I believe is quite a clean bill. There don't seem to be any poison pills that progressives like me will not be able to swallow, and I urge you to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mickelson. Mitra or Mitra Nelson, please. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Mitra Jalali Nelson. Does it need to be spelled?
No. No, we have it here, and thank you very much for saying it correctly.
Thank you. First of all, thank you to the members of the committee. I really value this opportunity to share my opinion with you today, so just want to say that I appreciate that. My name is Mitra Jalali Nelson, and I am a community member living in North Minneapolis, which has been my home since 2010. As a former teacher in Minneapolis public schools, as somebody who works with North Minneapolis youth regularly in my after-work life, and just as a lifelong Minnesotan, I urge you today to support House File 1870. And I want to share a story with you today about the power of quality teachers and the need for quality-based measures like this one that I think are so critical to making any progress in our school system today. This comes from a time in my classroom in Minneapolis. I was part of a team of seventh grade teachers last year that spent upwards of 10 hours a day with students from 7:30 in the morning when they would come through the door for breakfast to 5 or 5:30 at night when they were finishing their classes and getting ready to board the bus. Among this team of teachers today that I spent 10 to 12 hours a day with, working with directly or for students, I want to highlight just one. Nicole, whose last name I omit for privacy, was the seventh grade English language arts teacher at my school last year. Her students knew her as a teacher, a joker, a human dictionary, an actress, someone who made talent shows for them happen at school because no one else would take that on. And above all, she was a champion of just absolute tough love and high expectations for our students. She woke up every single day at 5 a.m. to make sure that every single student that she worked with that day received an outstanding education. In these 2 years, many longtime staff who had been working at the school remarked that the 2 years that Nicole had spent with the students that she'd been working with had created remarkable growth. In the 2 years that were led by Nicole in our classroom, our seventh graders grew, together and on average, 4 years in reading and 2 years in writing ability. That is a combined 6 years of growth across the grade in college essential academic areas in just 2 years. One of our special ed students, David, came to us in the sixth grade unable to write a complete sentence. After 2 years in the classroom with Nicole, he was able to write coherent five-paragraph essays on a fictional novel. There's one more thing to know about Nicole in this story, which is that in this story, she is just a second-year teacher. In her first 2 years of teaching, Nicole produced literally six years of gains in growth. If policies based literally on the day that you first picked up the chalk were allowed to be enacted at my school, Nicole would have been asked to leave, and our students would be potentially on fundamentally different pathways. David still wouldn't be able to write a sentence, and the entire seventh grade wouldn't be reading on grade level. To those unfamiliar with all of the data that support the case for policies like this one, I want to just offer my story about Nicole. I ultimately believe that you can read 100 reports that tell you different things, depending on who wants you to believe in them. But you can't fake 2 years of 10 to 12 hour days in the classroom. You can't deny that David wrote a five-paragraph essay on The Outsiders, which is articulate and coherent structurally and grammatically from beginning to end. You can't sit in a classroom full of seventh graders who all know how to make high-level comments and observations about the book A Raisin in the Sun and decide that it should all be taken away from them because their teacher has only been there for 2 or 3 years. The fact of the matter is that high expectations for students work. And we need to have high expectations for adults, too. That's why I'm here today in support of this measure. 99 to 100% of my students live and go to school in North Minneapolis. They're my neighbors, they're my students, they're my inspiration. And they're the one group of individuals in Minnesota who cannot vote. I believe it's our job as adults, then, to consider students first when we make decisions about the daily lives that they live out. There are literally thousands of teachers who can't be here today because they woke up and went to school because they committed to making sure that their students got an education today. They view their job in the domain of their classroom to ensure that their students' education comes before all other factors and obstacles. And I think that in your domain, in these chambers, this is your job too. Each of you here today has a chance to really make history and to support a measure that's going to transform the education that our students could possibly be receiving. And so I urge you to support this measure because I truly believe that it represents high expectations that I saw work for students like David and for students that I taught while I was on the seventh grade team last year for countless hours, and because it holds high expectations to the adults who are responsible for providing them with that education. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mitra. Are there others in the audience who would like to testify in support House File 1870 as amended? Then we'll begin to hear from from the School Boards Association, Mr. Schneiderwind. And Mr. Arnson, you're on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderwind. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I actually had an opportunity to sit down and have dinner with my kids the other day, and which is rare at this time of year. And they started gushing about one of their 8th grade teachers. Couldn't stop, couldn't explain why, but they absolutely adore and perform well for this 8th grade teacher. And I said, well, how do you know? How do you know he's a good teacher? And in unison, they said to me, he just is. Well, as a school board member, as a parent, you accept that from an 8th grader. But as a school board member who governed their district with policies and agreements, and the issue of ULA, I think the issue of teacher performance is certainly one to think about. And we in large part think that the bill before you provides some great discussion about the seniority-based system and the current practice that districts and boards go through each spring. So as a result, MSBA is optimistic about the opportunity this bill presents. We work closely with Representative Peterson, legislative staff, and others in an attempt to improve and sharpen the ULA process and create meaningful data so administrators and board members can make informed decisions when going through the ULA process rather than just a blind seniority process. Is the bill perfect? No. And Representative Peterson and I have had discussions about there are some items that can hopefully be addressed as this bill moves forward. It's important to get it right because we have people on our staff and we have school board members who want to make the right decisions when the ULA process is before them. So there are, having said that, I'm not going to go into detail about some of the issues that we have concerns with, but I just want to highlight some of the important pieces that we think are necessary to be included in the bill. One of the provisions is a minor but significant clarification in paragraph J, where it changes the word from any to each. And we think that that's a minor piece, but a significant piece that requires the teachers who are going to be reinstated to provide written statements each year rather than any year. And so we think if it's a first, if it's from 1 year to 5 years, if they're still interested in being recalled or reinstated, they do it every year. Second, we believe the language dealing with the recall found in paragraph B and two other places that states the school board is not required to reassign a teacher with more seniority to a different subject matter licensure field in order to accommodate the seniority claims of a teacher who is similarly licensed and effective but with less seniority. We think that provision is important and gives school boards discretion to move the teacher rather than defaulting to a seniority-based system. If you have an instance where you're moving a teacher who is not taught in but has a license in English for 30 years and has a social studies license, that the board or the administration should have some discretion with that. And thirdly, we support the language that continues to allow boards to non-renew a probationary teacher. That language was retained. I know there's some consternation about that, but we certainly believe within those first 3 years that a board and an administration should have that discretion on probationary teachers. So in the end, we believe the discussion is one worth having, that it's an important, if we're looking at having the most effective teachers in front of our students each and every day, that this is a discussion that needs to be had. And we look forward to working with Representative Peterson and others as the bill progresses.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schneiderman. There's a question, Representative Kaff.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Schneiderman, I guess the question I have kind of goes with that same statement that you had about putting somebody in a substantially different grade level assignment or things. Do you read that as well, though, as saying that somebody holds like an English and a social studies but has been put on a TOSA assignment? Do you look at that as an issue where the board would have full discretion on that? Because I guess that's a question that I have. Or how are you guys reading into that, where it's somebody that is not in a teaching position for 5 years because they're on a QComp teacher evaluation program and then want to bump in? Would that be, to you, then something that would be considered a substantially different grade level assignment or a substantially different assignment? Because I think that's a concern that I personally have right now with some of the language there.
Mr. Schneiderwind.
Madam Chair and Representative Kaff, and I knew there was a reason I brought an associate with me today. I brought Bill Cout, who works in our Management Services Division, who deals with issues like this on a day-to-day basis. Every spring he gets calls from boards and superintendents on what is the correct process. And I think he has perhaps some examples, maybe not directly answering the question, but I think that maybe very close. So.
Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record and please begin.
My name is Bill Cout. Representative Kaff, in answer to your question, I think the short answer would be it depends. Because of the instance that you cite, it would depend maybe in how long they've been a teacher on special assignment and what that special assignment was. In our model language that we attempt to have our districts negotiate, we have a phrase that's called qualified. And in order to be qualified, not only do you have to have a major in the subject matter that you teach and a license in that area, but you have to have taught it in that subject matter in the last 5 years. So if this person that's on this TOSA had taught in that area in the last 5 years, we would feel that they indeed were qualified and able to move back. Going back to the instance that Kurt mentioned, it may be that that teacher of 30 years in English has no desire to go back to social studies, does not feel that they're qualified, and so we feel that this language would protect that individual, that senior teacher, and would be more beneficial to our students because they would be getting someone who hadn't been in that area in the last 30 years.
Thank you very much. Mr. Arntzen, are you prepared to testify? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Peterson, did you want to ask it of these gentlemen? Gentlemen, at least Mr. Cout, will you come back, please, I think. Representative Peterson, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was looking at the, it would be page 7, and 713 to 719, but basically talking about the seniority rights, and it talks about a substantially different grade level assignment means an assignment between kindergarten grades 1 through 6. In other words, if you've got the kindergarten through 6 license, are you saying somebody in kindergarten could not go into the 1 through 6 just automatically? I mean, their license is K through 6.
Mr. Cout.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, again, that would depend upon what other language was placed in the procedure. If we use that definition of qualified that we talked about, if they had taught in that area in the last 5 years, then there would be no problem. I know when I negotiated for the teachers in St. Peter, they negotiated language that was similar to this, and they included a provision that said you had to have taught in that area in the last 5 years or requested to be reassigned to that area. And then if you hadn't taught in the last 5 years and you did move, you were required to go back and get at least 3 credits in that subject matter area. My wife, who is a kindergarten teacher, claims that there is a tremendous difference between teaching kindergarten and the rest of the elementary grades. So she would be appalled if I didn't say that to move, especially an upper elementary teacher in the kindergarten would be a drastic change and may affect the quality of the instruction in the classroom. So I don't know if that answers your question, but...
Representative Peterson, follow-up.
Madam Chair, and what did, I didn't get your name.
Bill Cout.
Okay. Mr. Cout. You know, this one concerns me because kindergarten through six is an actual license, and it seems to me you're really confining a kindergarten teacher to teach kindergarten for the rest of their lives, when, or a first grade teacher who could never teach kindergarten. And even though the license says that they can, I think this is pretty discriminatory. And having done both, I would say that they are different, but very, very doable. And if you've had a good college preparation course, I believe the kindergarten endorsement even is a little is almost separate. It seems to me that this is really not a very good provision. Because elementary teachers feel they're elementary teachers, K through six. But anyway, just a comment.
And Representative Peterson, I'm sure that's something that Representative Brandon Peterson can work on as this proceeds to K-12 finance. Representative Peterson?
Yeah, Madam Chair, since we're talking about it, I think there. I would make two points, and certainly I'm willing to continue the conversation, but I don't think that we want to get into... prescribing every element of a district's negotiations, whether it's, you know, the language that you mentioned that you suggest for model contracts, or, and then secondarily, this situation only, again, applies to this very unique situation where you have someone with more seniority trying to claim or claiming a position in instances of ULA. So it's not as if we're saying generally a teacher can't, you know, move from K to 1 or K to 2. It's in a very specific situation. And I don't know if there's a whole lot of precedent, and maybe you can speak to this, for getting down to that level in prescribing what districts ought to do with, you know, with the teachers. I don't know if you have any input on that. But.
Madam,
Mr. Cout.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Mr. Peterson, I do not have data that could tell you how often that particular change is made. But you do bring up a good point. This would only apply when districts were laying individuals off or recalling individuals. And so it does not prevent the individual teacher who has that license, if they would wish to change, going to their principal, requesting a change if a vacancy is there and so forth. So I guess that's all I can say.
Representative Sandra Peterson, you know, what you're referring to is also found on page 4 under the school districts that are not of the first class. What you were referring to is the part of law that is about discharge or demotion under cities of the first class. So do you have a question? Was your question about both of those sections or just about cities of the first class where it's called not unrequested leave but discharge or demotion?
Well, I need to go back to 4 and read here. Madam Chair, I just would be concerned about differentiating,
you.
And
thank
I don't know if that applies to both cities of the first class. I mean, it sounds to me like we're really hammering on cities of the first class today, but I think for any of the districts, that K through 6 license is very fluid, and they change grade levels both, I mean, automatically or on layoff. And if you have the license, it's no matter what, if you're on layoff, you ought to be able to claim a position in those areas. If
thank
you meet the if you haven't
yes.
met, if you have a good evaluation.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Arnson. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Roger Arnson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary Principals Association, and we appreciate the continuing discussion on these issues. I think that one of the things that's important for the committee to put this in the context of is what you did last year. And last year you passed two major evaluation bills, one relating to principals and one relating to teachers. This particular bill is directly connected to the teacher evaluation model. I assume you're going to hear from a lot of folks today about that that model is still in the works. We have high hopes for that model and the implementation of that model, but it is far from, it is in the formative stage at this particular point. One of the things that you heard from the proponents of Representative Peterson's bill is that laying off young teachers is painful. And that's true. It's absolutely true. It's horrible to lay these people off. When they are energetic, they are new, they work very, very hard, and it is, and should we find some way to keep them? We think that's legitimate, too. We want to keep good young people. We want to attract good people. And it is an ongoing challenge for this committee, has been for decades and will be for decades into the future, of how do we do that. One of the things I think as you further explore this issue, and I think Representative Peterson would say this is the beginning of this discussion on this matter, and it's appropriate to have this discussion. People should have to defend institutions that they rely on and make the case for it and change them when that's appropriate. I know school principals believe that. I know you believe that. But one of the points about this bill is how many of those young teachers that you heard so passionately that the public is interested in and that we all are interested in would this bill save? One of the things about this is I believe, and I don't have the data, you should get the data. You should have the department get you the data so you can talk about this. How many of our teacher layoffs are probationary? And that's in the first 3 years. And my guess is, as you would review school board records, that you would find that the vast majority of, quote, layoffs actually are probationary discontinuances. And that stays in this statute. That would continue. We would discontinue probationary teachers, people who are in their first 3 years of teaching, some of those very compelling people you heard about, under this bill. We're not looking to change that. So you get back to who would we keep in this very narrow band then as we move above the probationary people and into the bottom parts of the teaching staff. The thing that we want you to look at closely is, and one other thing I thought you would be one of the other things we thought that you would be interested in looking at is that the layoff system in Minnesota is structured in the statute. So initially there was an encouragement that districts negotiate their own plan for placement of people on unrequested leave. Mm-hmm. That provision is actually copied in your amendment. It's in the second page of it. Subdivision 10 of the statute basically says the board and the teachers can negotiate a plan. Failing to do so, the seniority-based system kicks in. If you to really get the hook on how this works, if you look to page 3 of your amendment, paragraph B, first of all, paragraph A says that you got to lay off the probationary people before you can get to the people who have continuing contract rights. That's in A. So as a matter of law, probationary people go first. The second part says teachers are placed on unrequested leave in fields in which they are licensed, in the inverse order in which they are employed. Those are the two critical features that Representative Peterson is looking at in this bill, length of service and licensure. And that's how we make the decisions. Now, if you don't, and I think it's interestingly talked about at the front that says if the district fails, notice how you used that word some years ago, failure to negotiate your own plan locally. Two things I'll leave you with, and I know I haven't answered much about the bill for you. We need to encourage local districts to do this. You set a model up last summer when you drafted the teacher evaluation bill, and you said local districts adopt your own evaluation. And if you don't, we've got a 38-member committee that's going to meet every month from now until December that's going to draft an evaluation program that we're reasonably certain isn't going to be everything you want. So do it locally, mm-hmm. You know, and frankly, with this, you should figure out some way to do this locally, make it work. Some more carrot, with STIC some incentives to pilot this so that we can take whatever this new tool is and try to make this stuff work. And we're committed to do this and moving along, Madam Chair. And like we appreciate the discussion very much and look forward to continuing to be part of it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Aronson. Representative Peterson, did you have a comment?
Yeah, there are a couple of points that I'd just like to respond to in there. The first is Mr. Aronson correctly pointed out that we would prefer a locally negotiated agreement, and that is actually in the bill as we wrote it. The first option is a locally negotiated agreement. The second, though, is this false assertion that somehow there's this option out there that we've just been overlooking all along that says local districts can negotiate right now. Well, if one of the parties in the negotiation can simply refuse to come to an agreement and therefore by default have a seniority mandate at the state level, then that's what they're going to do, you know, a vast majority of the time, if not every time. So my question would be, what is the compelling argument for making seniority the one and only basis for that decision? And in what way does that benefit students? And I think that's at the heart of the conversation I'm sure that we'll have today. So,
members, I know you have some pressing questions, but we're going to have to hold those while we listen to those who are opposed to 1870. And I'll call forward Peter Eckhoff. Please come forward. And on deck, Mary Catherine Ricker. And after her, Jim Smola. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Peter Eckhoff. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify here today. My name is Peter Eckhoff, and I'm a third grade teacher and currently president of the Robbinsdale Federation of Teachers. I'm here to talk about this file and some of the effects I believe it'll have both on Robbinsdale teachers and the Robbinsdale School District. Last year, the new teacher evaluation bill passed, and I believe that we need to give it some time to be implemented and achieve the goals that we all share, namely, to nurture good teachers into great teachers and to identify the teachers who need greater supports to get where we need them to be, teaching our children to the high standards that we all expect. As a member of the Commissioner's Task Force on Teacher Evaluation, I truly believe that we will come up with a strong instrument for teacher development and evaluation to continue to have Minnesota teachers lead the nation. As a union leader, I value high standards for high-quality teachers. I also value due process for teachers. We need to be certain that the systems we put into place are fair and even-handed. And we need to be assured that the standards are high, measurable, and observable in a consistent manner across the entire profession. I am currently working very closely with our administration in Robbinsdale to build on our system of teacher evaluation, which serves our district now well, as it has in the recent past. It's a system that supports a fair process that acknowledges the value of experience, quality instruction, and the investments that we've made in our teaching veteran teaching staff. Well, some years ago, we began revamping our teacher evaluation system when we found that the principals throughout were using many different tools to do evaluations, often consisting of checklists with little systemic feedback and no real continuity between sites and levels. After developing the common tools for evaluation, I'm pleased to say that our district has been undergoing rigorous training for our principals to utilize these tools in an effort to have great consistency and work to avoid the bias available in potential evaluation tools. We're working for a system that will be objective and have scoring rubrics to be used consistently across all evaluators. When these tools are used well, and identify teachers that are not meeting standards, we work with our administration to go through a process that is so that has so far this year resulted in counseling four of our teachers out of the profession. We work very hard to make sure that at the end of the day, people are allowed to leave with their dignity intact and without making a public spectacle of them. We are committed to doing teacher evaluation very well. And I'm here today because I believe that this bill will leave teachers feeling like it sets them up for an arbitrary pick and choose for who teaches and who does not. The reality is that not all principals are highly effective. And yet we set teachers up to potentially be victim of poor or inconsistent evaluators. I believe that first, we need to train principals on quality. And after rigorous training, after vetting our weak principals, then we're in a position to set up a consistent system to work on teacher development and evaluation. I implore you to slow down. Allow us to do the work that you asked us to do in last year's bill. Allow us to continue to do the work at our local level as we continue to raise that bar for instruction and evaluation for all of our students. I'm asking you to vote against this bill. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer
Thank
any
you, Mr. Eckhoff. Ms. Ricker? Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and proceed.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, thank you very much. And members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to testify today. It is an honor. My name is Mary Catherine Ricker, and I'm a National Board Certified Middle School English teacher, currently serving as president of the St. Paul Federation of Teachers. I was first elected in 2005, and I represent over 3,000 teachers in St. Paul Public Schools. I understand viscerally that the 38,000 students of St. Paul Public Schools have one shot at a great K-12 education experience, not only because I've taught almost 1,000 of them, but because 2 of them are my own. The job of working to ensure good quality teaching is the responsibility of both the teachers' union and the administration. There is no labor management partnership more important than the one that comes together in order to ensure we can look our parents in the eye and guarantee that each teacher in our school system is ready to meet the needs of their child. In St. Paul, we constantly and consistently work for professional standards and good teaching. I would like to take this opportunity to invite all of you to come to St. Paul to learn about our evaluation process, about our teacher quality program, if you haven't had the chance to learn about it yet. After all of the time I have personally put into this teacher quality work, it is angering to me that the principal of Ms. Flood's school has not once taken advantage of this evaluation process. It is also angering that the senior administrators she spoke with were not well versed enough in this program to share any of those details with her. Right now, House File 1870, as it stands, really dishonors the interconnectedness among teachers that we know is real. If I make great gains with EBD students, for example, it may be, and I actually know this from past experience, because the special education teacher assigned to them is an absolute rock star at building relationships that I get to benefit from when they come to my class. Teachers have many examples of how we know our progress is interconnected. It is seldom because of siloed, completely independent work. Teacher quality is not like a hockey game or timing a horse race. We are not measuring effectiveness out to the thousandth place. When we need 5 English teachers, but we can only afford 4 of them, we actually need to be asking, why can't we afford that 5th English teacher our students actually need? Rather than ignoring that and choosing to fight over some illusionary, impartial way to determine which English teacher gets voted off the department island so we can satiate our penchant for sports metaphors and pop culture. We have successfully negotiated a full-spectrum peer assistance and review program in St. Paul. Full spectrum because it adopts teacher evaluations as a continuous growth model that lasts an entire career. And it was the model for Minnesota's first Race to the Top application. It begins with a rigorous program for assuring that tenure is never an accident in St. Paul Public Schools. It continues with full spectrum options for our tenured teachers. including those seeking leadership positions, insisting that they have a recent evaluation on file before they can even apply for a leadership position. Recently negotiated as a tentative agreement last night. Those seeking national board certification, support for those in new grade or subject areas, and support for teachers in need of improvement. House File 1870 would single-handedly sabotage every last bit of work we have done and replace it with an unnamed and expensive bureaucracy that wouldn't actually do anything to better meet the needs of students in St. Paul. Teacher quality is not ignored. Teachers who are struggling must have that support immediately, not be ignored until layoff time. Because our union and our district, among other unions and districts, are committed to making teacher quality a year-round process, the law as it stands provides a necessary vehicle for reducing staff when that unfortunate reduction is necessary. Groups that only care about teacher quality when layoffs are concerned don't actually care about teacher quality at all. Additionally, we have locally negotiated language that protects the integrity of successful programs like our Montessori programs and our immersion programs and our American Indian magnet. Experience is valued in every other profession. Why is experience disrespected in our profession? Why is age seen as a deficit? When a district and union are vigilant about teacher quality throughout the year and not just at layoff time, then layoffs based on the least experience work. Which brings me back to, why are we cutting teachers we actually need? And as much as I spend my professional days advocating for teacher quality, at the end of the day, this is personal for me too. I was mentored by three women in two different districts, each who had over 25 years of experience as I earned my National Board certification. And Marlena Dietrich had it right in the 20th century when she said it's the friends you can call at 2 in the morning that matter, because it was those teachers I could email at 2 in the morning who emailed me back that really mattered to earning my National Board certification. The best professional development I had in my life was from a teacher on special assignment coaching me who had over 20 years of experience. And then my children. My children have had excellent young teachers, excellent new teachers, and excellent veteran teachers. I know good teachers. My standards are very, very high. I don't want any strong teacher laid off, whether they are in their first year or their 40th. Please don't mix up the cuts we are making for budget reasons with the evaluation work it is our job to constantly and vigilantly do. Thank you again, and I do reiterate my sincere invitation to come to St. Paul to learn what we are doing with our evaluation system. Thank you very much for having me this morning.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Smola. Ms. Sundin, you're on deck, and Ms. Allsweiger after her. Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record, and please
Jim Smola, Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for the allowing me to testify today. My name is Jim Smola, and I am the president of the Dakota County United Educators, representing the teachers and nurses of ISD 196 in Rosemont, Apple Valley, and Eagan. I'm here to talk about teacher evaluation and seniority. As a teacher and union leader, I take great pride in my profession and do not want poor teachers in the classroom. It is bad for students, and it's a bad black eye for the profession I have dedicated my life to. Our members welcome the opportunity to improve their craft with a locally designed evaluation system. We have an excellent working relationship with our district and building administration, and have planned to continue that work this spring to strengthen our evaluation process to address the most recent legislation. I believe we have the basics in place to create an exceptional evaluation system. Over 10 years ago, the union and district recognized the need for consistency in evaluating tenured staff and to have a system in place that properly supports and evaluates probationary teachers. Together, we created a system that ensures all probationary teachers are evaluated 3 times a year and have peer support. We also jointly developed what we call an intensive assistance program to provide support for continuing contract teachers who have been identified by administration as deficient and in need of extra support. This program is not widely known by staff in the district, much less the public. Using this jointly created system, we have made the necessary improvements in performance to successfully allow staff to continue in their position and have had staff who have been jointly counseled out of the profession without public embarrassment. Any evaluation system should contain three components: evaluation, remediation, and if necessary, termination. I believe our system has all three and has been successful in allowing teachers to improve and in counseling teachers out of the profession. As a union leader, as a union, we welcome the opportunity to create an evaluation system that is of high quality. I certainly hope that before any other legislation is considered regarding teacher evaluation, you would consider giving districts and their local unions time to develop a locally negotiated system that meets the new legislation and the district needs. On the topic of continuing contract rights and layoffs, we have worked with the district over the past few years to make sure everyone's needs are protected: the students, the district, and the employees. Many years ago, we negotiated anti-strand language that does not allow senior teachers to be moved to accommodate the rights of less senior teachers. The district and the union more recently have created joint language that allows the district to move teachers during the school year to meet building staffing needs once fall enrollment numbers are confirmed. Teachers in certain disciplines are moved to allow building and program needs to be satisfied. In the contract we settled in November, we agreed to contract language that protects some positions that require additional competencies, specialized training, specialized knowledge, and mastery of specific skills from being bumped into by teachers. The district and the union recognize that some positions are unique and not suitable to being filled by someone who has a teaching license but lack the additional skill set. The locally negotiated joint agreements are good for students, employees, and the district. There isn't any empirical evidence that supports removing senior teachers will improve student achievement. In fact, research shows overall students do better academically with experienced teachers. Current law allows for an orderly process when reducing staff. If your concern is effective teachers, allow the evaluation legislation that was currently passed to become in place in districts around the state. When the evaluation system is in place, the quality of teachers will improve, because an effective evaluation system using trained evaluators will improve the profession of teaching. And again, thank you for your time and allowing me to speak today.
Thank you, Mr. Smola. Ms. Sundin? Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Louise Sundin. I am President Emeritus of the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers. That word mostly means old, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about the history. Decisions about continuing employment based on quality processes has been our goal for the last couple of decades in creating a truly professional model for teachers. Now, in order to do that, we have to look at the rest of the professions. We have done that, and the rest of the professions have a good model that we think we have been working towards for a number of years. The real professions are moving us away from the industrial model, and we're supportive of that. But as a founding mothers are moving us away from the industrial model, and we're supportive of that. But as a founding mother of the Teacher Union Reform Network, one example is that we invited to the Great Lakes Turn meeting last fall a couple of physicians to find out exactly how they bring new physicians into and train and mentor and make peer review decisions about their entry and about their continuing professional development in a profession. They make those decisions. They don't rely on anybody else except those in the profession. And I might, just as an aside, remind people who are old enough to remember this, that when I was having a hip replaced not too long ago, I did not seek out Doogie Howser to do the surgery. Our professional model is based, first of all, on a year-long residency. This is our model that we have created over the years. Some of the provisions have gone away. Some are still there. That year-long residency is the most, as testified by anybody who has anything to do with it, it is the best induction year of anything you can create. We also have a very rigorous three-year achievement of tenure process that we invented. We're still the only local in the country that has that specific process that we invented brought to the table. And during those 3 years, we assess, mentor, coach, and counsel out people who don't belong in the profession or don't have what it takes to be a skilled part of the profession. Over the last couple of decades, we have either removed or through peer review after the achievement of tenure process comes what I call a pervasive peer review process, which is every single year, all year long for your entire career. You work with your colleagues and in assessing each other and helping each other. Through that process over the last decade or so, we have either removed or counseled out over 500 professional colleagues who either couldn't or wouldn't get significantly better. Those numbers don't always appear in studies because those numbers of those who were quietly counseled out by mentors or quietly helped to find something else don't always appear in surveys. Now the future includes, we believe and are hopeful, maybe, and I brought it up at the task force on teacher evaluation the other day, that maybe we can now start looking at student feedback processes. We have used that as part of our achievement of tenure process requirement, but now it looks like through the Harvard Project that it is valid and reliable enough to maybe be able to be used in assessment of teachers. We also are looking at some other research that is coming out of the Gates MET Project, Measuring Effective Teachers. But even the Gates Project, after 100, and I'm on the assessment committee for that project, even that Gates Project, after $100 million, they still haven't found the process for evaluating teachers to make it valid and reliable enough, they feel, to make all employment decisions based on student scores. But I also will remind you of a Dr. Sanders research, and that is that in Sanders' research, he believed that, and we believe strongly, and I do from my memory of my first years of teaching, that it takes at least 5 years of really good teaching experience with help and mentoring, as you heard Ms. Ricker state, in those first few years to become a really good teacher. The most, for the years of the most productivity, Dr. Sanders says that is years 12. Not until year 12 do we reach maximum productivity, which in our his and our language is the student scores. So we don't necessarily believe that people walking in the door have the kinds of experience that they need. I would suggest only semi-facetiously, if we want to keep all those good, bubbly, enthusiastic young teachers that are in to make a difference, we can keep them by shifting back the funds so that we can have the lower class sizes that we promised students and promised families, and lower class sizes means we could keep those young teachers. We have negotiated in Minneapolis all of the processes that I've told you and are mostly still intact. But we also have negotiated, as a result of the change in the tenure law, some exceptions to layoffs, and those exceptions are exceptions that can be documented. And those are, at various times, Montessori, those who have autism certificates, not just who say they can teach autistic kids, because anybody can say that, but it's a very different kind of training. Language proficiency, again, not just saying that you can speak the language, but actually testing out on a test. So we are very, and there are others that aren't coming to my mind right now, that we view as legitimate exceptions. We ask you to leave that opportunity to do so and to support our efforts that you've heard about this morning to create a truly professional model, but one that is created through the cooperation, collaboration, and workings of the bargaining unit and the district, so that we can deal with local decisions. And we ask you to think of teaching as, indeed, a true profession. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sundin. And Ms. Alsweger is the last on our list to oppose 1870 as amended. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and Committee Jan Alsweger, Education Minnesota. And I want to thank Representative Peterson for the opportunity to have this discussion, because I think there is a real misunderstanding out there about what really happens in school districts. You know, there are great doctors, there are doctors that aren't so great. We have fabulous teachers, and we have some teachers that need improvement. The same with superintendents, the same with principals. So I'm thrilled that we had the opportunity to have some of our union leaders, who I consider extreme teacher professionals, come to talk to you about how their priorities include making sure they have great teachers in the classroom. I know from talking to every one of them and virtually every union president and field staff person that I've talked to that works for Education Minnesota have counseled teachers out of the profession, even before the district even tried to take action. If you have a collaborative relationship, an administrator can go to the union president, can go to the field staff and say, you know, we've got some issues with this teacher. Let's talk about it. I was able to do it when I was a field staff, and my colleagues do as well. But I agree with Ms. Sundin's statement that we probably wouldn't be here to this degree if we had funding so that we had fewer students in our class, we had more kids, more teachers teaching our kids. But we're in a situation where we are laying people off. I am first going to talk about some of the specifics of the bill, and then I will summarize with the general comments. If you look at page one, I want to make sure that you understand that you are giving a super seniority, really, to on lines 1.25 and 1.26 to the teachers who are alternatively licensed. So even if they are in a provisional license, so it appears that they would have seniority more than other teachers. I would then turn you to ask you to go to page two. There has been some discussion about it, but I'd like you to point to you the language. On line 2.16, it says a representative of the school board and the exclusive bargaining representative of the teachers may negotiate. There is no requirement to negotiate. And then on line 2.21, it says, if the school board fails to successfully negotiate, then the school board gets to make all those decisions. So one could say, if the school board chooses not to, because ultimately they are the ones who will be making the decision. I want to make that very clear. What is different about, as someone earlier laid out, you know, how the current licensure system works and layoff system works, this is different. And that the board is under no obligation to negotiate. And then teachers, the first step is that teachers are placed in categories based on their evaluation outcomes. The second step is that teachers are grouped by licensure. And the third step then is teachers in each of those licensure or those categories effectiveness then are grouped by seniority within that effectiveness, or excuse me, in the licensure. So it gets a little bit complicated. And someone also brought up the point about substantially different grade levels, line 2.33 to 2.35, and it's in multiple places. I think there's a significant debate if someone is qualified, if they can go to another subject area. Our attorneys have reviewed it, and we think that it is not necessarily the case, and it is an item that would be hotly debated. For instance, if a teacher is in a very respected math teacher, has had fabulous evaluations, has been there for 20 years, and you go through a declining enrollment process and you need a science teacher, but we don't have any qualified science teachers. So the administrator goes to the math teacher and said, I know you're a licensed math teacher, you do just a fabulous job in math. And you go, and they say, will you please get a waiver? We'll get a waiver for you through the licensure process. And now you will teach science. So the math teacher goes over there. But because of the whole licensure categories, maybe that teacher then is going to be laid off. Maybe that teacher isn't as good of a science teacher, but they were one heck of a math teacher. We believe that science teacher, formerly successful math teacher, could be let go. We also think of lines 3.4 to 3.5, the substantially different issue, going from, we have K license. So we have 1 through 6 licenses. We have K through 6 license. We have high school licensure. We have middle school endorsement. How do you sort this out? There are first grade teachers that would be phenomenal kindergarten teachers. There are second grade teachers that would be phenomenal sixth grade teachers. Going to page 5, line 1. It says that, you know, they would be recalled the following year only. You set a 2-year budget. School districts make decisions on 2-year budgets. So why, when the current law is 5 years that you could let a teacher come back, they'd have rights to recall, why would we only have 1 year? And how would they be informed in lines 5.2 to 5.3? I have a question about how those teachers would be informed in the new process. When we get to lines 5.26, we now hit the cities of the first class statutes, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. We believe that this statute, this language is different than the teachers in the rest of the state, because immediately we believe that even if they are negotiating a process, that the school board would have the right to terminate or lay off an employee based on a process they choose. Some quick overall comments. We believe that these processes have been working very well in many, many places. So we ask you not to do this now. We think that the licensure categories that were established by the Board of Teaching actually mean something. And so let's follow those licensure categories. We can talk about evaluation, yes, but those licensure categories are important. We know that there's a shortage of special ed teachers. We have people who are licensed in EBD, some in LD, some in SLD, and we could go on with all the different areas. We are concerned, and this is one of my biggest concerns, I think, is that we have a new evaluation process, and we're just jumping in and putting this new proposal before us. And we worked with Representative Peterson to try to get a good evaluation system. We're not 100% happy with it, but we want it to work. We want good teachers in the classroom. We want bad teachers removed from the classroom. But by putting the system in now the way it is, we are going to have principals who really aren't trained to evaluate, starting to evaluate teachers. And how do we know that all of these principals are highly effective? And so you're going to have principals, some principals, I know Mr. Arnson would say all principals are perfect right now. Just joking. But there are some that probably need some help. And yet these individuals are going to be making decisions. I'll just give you one quick example. We had a teacher, and this is one reason why I think tenure and continuing contract rights are so very important. And I consider when I was a teacher, the reason I might have had trouble with my principal is because I was an advocate.
Ms. Allswiger, will you wrap it up, please? Because we've gone beyond our time limit for keeping balance. So
please.
So because we have questions that need to be asked.
So we had a teacher who at an IEP meeting answered the PACER advocates' questions honestly. That teacher was disciplined. If that principal gave that evaluation to the teacher, you can be sure it would not have been the evaluation that someone else might have given her. We don't think that there is an adequate appeal process. It's a quick process. It's a quick judgment. It appears that it could be made on 1 year. And I'll just conclude by saying, we think that this is too soon. We know that Representative Peterson has good intentions. I think all of you have good intentions. But we've got some great processes. Let's let those work. And we're happy to work with anybody who is interested in always improving the teaching profession.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. Representative Kapp, question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I guess first off for the Chair, is there a possibility to continue this conversation? I guess I have about a dozen questions about the bill, just to how logistically, like what some of the legislative intent is on some of it, especially how it will work with the evaluation bill. And I guess first I would ask the Chair's indulgence to kind of give us a timeline for this bill or kind of what the plan is, because I do have a significant number of questions. This is my profession and in some areas of how this is going to work or how this will look for some of the areas.
Representative Kathy, members, there's the possibility, but we did want to move it out today. But there's that possibility. So proceed with your question, please.
Great, thank you. Well, Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, I guess I'm looking for some direction from you on some of the areas of legislative intent within it, because I think there's some concerns there. For instance, you know, I carry a 712 license in social studies, and my neighboring school is actually a 712 school where they have a teacher that teaches, you know, 1 hour of the day is 7th grade and another hour is 12th grade, and they actually teach that way. But by how your bill is put forward here, there is a chance that I would never be able to teach in 7th to 8th grade, because if I mostly teach 9 through 12, which is what my high school is now, I wouldn't be able to go in there because of that section where you're talking about kind of the meaningful, you know, the changes within those districts or how that should be done, a substantially different grade level assignment. And I guess, first of all, what is your legislative intent there? Or what does that look like when I am actually licensed 712, but yet there is a substantially different, or what is your intent there?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kapp, again, I think it's really important to identify exactly what situation we're talking about here. We're talking about a very specific situation that only relates to ULA processes, that realignment question that you're asking about, that only relates to that specific instance. So in all other instances, you're going to be able to teach in, you know, wherever an administrator decides that you can teach by joint agreement, I presume. So that is not going to prevent you from going to another school and teaching, only in the instance where the site has decided or there's a possibility that the site could decide to use seniority to move someone out of a position to support the seniority claims of another teacher. That's a very narrow scope there, and what you're asking was a general question about whether or not you'd be able to teach at this other school, which of course you could, as long as you know you went through that process. So.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kapp.
But to follow up, Representative Peterson, is that actually over the last 3 years, we've probably had a dozen teachers in just social studies in Owatonna alone have to face this. I was one person away from having to face this just last year, and I'm 12 years into my teaching. What your bill says is I am licensed 712, but if my junior high principal or my high school principal tells me, you know what, you've been teaching mostly 912, we don't want to allow you to go to that junior high where they were all new teachers, okay? I would not be allowed because they might say that is a substantially big change for me, because normally I've only taught ninth grade. Teaching seventh grade would be a substantial change, so they would drop me in my 10th year of teaching and keep the fourth year teacher at the junior high. Is that your intent here?
No, and I don't believe that's the practical effect of the bill either. The language in the bill is saying that it's not required, that we're not going to force anyone's hand in that decision-making process. And Lisa maybe can weigh in on the language, but that's the way that I understand it, and no, it's not my intent.
Representative Benz, do you have a question?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I would yield if my colleague would like to carry on with that particular discussion, but I had wanted to ask a question of Mr. Arnson, who was here before.
Mr. Arnson, please come forward.
Would you, Representative Kath, do you have a follow-up question here?
Madam Chair, I have a bunch of questions, but I'll let, Mr. Benson, Representative Benson answer his.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Arnson, I wanted to visit with you about a couple of just kind of general concerns about this legislation. First of all, because I've heard you testify in committees before, and you're always well-founded in the history and the practical effects of legislation, so I'm hoping I can get a nice straight answer.
Thank you, Representative Benson.
From you that isn't burdened by ideology, etc. And I just wanted to say that, first of all, my career also was in education, and 2 years before I retired, I was nominated and received a National Award of Teacher of the Year for the state of Minnesota, a Presidential Teacher of the Year. And I only mention that not to brag, because of my Scandinavian ancestry, it's difficult for me to even mention it. But
we're proud of you.
It's important to this discussion, because one of my concerns, although student learning outcomes is the first concern, and schools are established for children, not for adults, but I am concerned about promoting the profession as well. And I noticed when I was teaching in my district, whenever financial problems began to develop, then we would hear a discussion about how we need to get rid of the old dead wood. And as I got older, I was wondering if they were referring to me as the dead wood as well. So my question is this. Let's say under this bill we have a top performing teacher who's high on the seniority list, and the student learning outcomes this teacher has been producing through the years equals basically a third year teacher who's farther down on the seniority list and whose remuneration is much less. And considering the difficulties school districts are having now that the legislature in its wisdom has decided to shift 40% of all the state funding and leaving school districts in a lurch, could a district with this legislation more easily release the higher tenured teacher and retain the least tenured teacher in order to save funds?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Arnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson. That's an excellent question, and it's excellent because that's the question that those teachers are going to have when a system such as this gets adopted on an annual basis. It depends on what the tool looks like, which it hasn't been done yet as we get to the assessments, because the current evaluation model is only 35% of it is connected to data. So the 65% of it that's balanced, those are going to be some sort of competencies with some sort of rubric that are going to assign numerical values for some conduct. And I think the thing that gets most people concerned, and which what you're asking about is, can there be mischief in that? So I decide that Representative Greiling is
careful.
She's retiring, but she's still here.
That's correct. And Chair, if you indulge me for a minute, she said now she feels free to say what she thinks. I don't know what that how that could be any different. But I think the concern that people will have is, can I, in that 65%, assign some values in the evaluation for Representative Greiling so I keep her over you? I mean, I think that's the concern in that system. Is it subject to being manipulated when you get down to making those decisions? And I think, as everyone that talks about this would tell you, even without this change, if we put together a group of teachers and principals and want to talk about unrequested leave and how does it work and who's going to get laid off, even without that, it generates considerable amount of discussion and concern. So when you change all this, that would happen annually. People would be sitting there, and because we have a lot of things that happen that people do in terms of unrequested leave, where people drop licenses so they're not subject to some of the stuff that Representative Peterson's trying to get at in this bill and getting bumped back into those areas. You know about that. And anyway, but yes, there is some potential for mischief in this. And obviously more of that will be clarified as we get the tool done.
Thank you, Mr. Arnson. Yeah, members, sure. You need to write your questions down so you have them when we resume this on February 9th. And with that, members, I'll lay this bill over, and this meeting is adjourned.